From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's Tuesday, the 17th day of March, 2009. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And Mike Barwinski, a senior trader with Louis Dreyfus Commodities, will join us to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, Mexico is increasing tariffs on 90 U.S. products. It's retaliating against the U.S. for closing off a program that allowed Mexican-licensed trucks to cross the border into the United States. Corn ethanol producer Aventine says it may face bankruptcy, and the Secretary of Ag is optimistic U.S. EPA will include a billion with a B-gallon soybean diesel mandate in the next version of the RFS. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear about two upcoming University of Illinois conferences, one on biofuels, laws, and regulations, the other on manure. Hey, and in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast, and it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible.
Is a production of Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures like this for the day. Nearby May wheat gained 8.25 cents to settle at 552.5, July at 564.75, up 8, September 589, up 7.75, July hard red at 616 in Kansas City, up 8.75. May corn futures down a penny at $3.90.5, July at $4.75, down 1, September corn at 409.25, down 3/4, and December corn futures a half lower at 420.75, the March 2010 contract at 431.25 in the corn pit, a 0.25 cent loss. Soybeans now May contract 913 up 2, July at 910.5 up 3, August 896 up 4.5 cents, and September 872.5 up 9. November beans 10.5 cents higher for the day. They settled today at $8.61. May bean meal down $2.46 at $2.86. May bean oil at $31.31, up 45. April live cattle, $84.30, 15 cents lower. Feeder cattle, March contract up 90 at $92.60. And lean hogs settled the April at $62.15, 60 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil trading the April contract at $49.16 a barrel, settled $1.81 higher on the afternoon. The May up $1.99 at $50.04. April ethanol at $1.56.3, 1.7 cents lower. And the natural gas April contract at $3.82.1, 3 cents lower on the day. The RBOB gasoline 5.5 cents higher at $1.42.2, and the heating oil, that's diesel fuel, up 5.9 cents at $1.27.2. April propane trading 64 cents even, just about unchanged on the day. And the gold futures at $916.40 an ounce, down $5.20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average 100 points higher at 73.17. The U.S. dollar at 86.92. down 0.07, and the CRB index for the day at 216.46 is up 2.57 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own forecaster, Mike Sola. He says tonight in northern Illinois, increasing cloudiness, elsewhere mostly clear. Lows will range from 40 in northern Illinois to 50 in the southwestern part of the state. Tomorrow in northern Illinois, mostly cloudy, a chance for a drizzle or light rain early, then showers and possibly a few thunderstorms. In central sections in northern Indiana, partly sunny early, then increasing cloudiness, with a chance for a shower or two during the afternoon. In the south, partly to mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow, says Mike, will range from 46 in the northern part of Illinois to 74 in the south. The drying trend will be reversed, though, with a round of light to moderate rain through Thursday morning and a more active period next week. More on that as we close out the program closer to the bottom of this half hour.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets and how they traded for the day. To get a little analysis on hand with us, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Wayne.
And what a lovely day for all the parades, Todd.
Oh, parades. Are you wearing the green today?
Well, of course.
Naturally, I wish I was, but I'm not, I'm afraid. And with a name like Gleason, you'd think I would be.
But... yeah, you still have time to put something green on and go out this evening.
No, I think we probably will. I've got corned beef and cabbage on at home, so by the time we get home tonight, that should be good. Let's talk about the marketplace. You know, it's not been so terribly bad since last Tuesday when we talked to you live over at the All Day Ag Outlook in Covington, Indiana, the Beef House. Today, beans were up a little, corn off just slightly. How'd you see the trade?
Well, I mean, actually, we've had a great week as far as things go, and we had that little pop that we were talking about from the oversold condition, and it seemed to be taking place. We started out a little better this morning, with a little follow-through buying and the rally in the crude oil this morning. Then we got into the rumor mill. There's a big rumor out of Argentina that the government and the farmers are trying to work on a pact to reduce the corn and bean export taxes, that there's a possibility of the corn export tax would drop to zero on the corn and down in the 5 to 10% bracket on the beans, where we're at 35% now. But that would go down on the first 1,000 metric tons sold. And they think that this might get a little action from the farmers, a little some happiness along the way as to decide that they might be able to get back in the idea instead of holding off from selling everything because of the taxes to get things moving down there. So that's when we saw the buying of the new crop and selling of the old crop by the commercials, and because of the tariffs might go down to zero on the corn, why we saw the corn back up and just close just down a penny, Todd.
So what do you make of the whole thing, given that and the close in the corn and soybeans after early gains today, trading just a bit down to the bottom end of the range, anyway.
Well, in all honesty, with the news that Argentina might be back in the markets, it was actually a very good close, I thought, Todd.
Right.
We're looking here today at November beans up 10.5 cents, and corn putting them back in the export market on that. We're only down a penny after the gains we've made as of late. I think that we didn't get crushed by the selling that could have happened, and that being that was the only fundamental news out there except the outside markets.
Yeah, so bearish fundamental news. You have the outside markets. Currently, the Dow's up nearly 100 points or something thereabouts for the day. So the outside markets were supportive, but not really changing the marketplace very much. Does this bode well, you think, for the next month or so as we head into the growing season? Usually we get some kind of seasonal pop in the market.
We considered it a strong close. To only be down a penny with the fundamental news being poor with no other news out there. And I think that the Dow wasn't up that much at closing time, and crude's increased a little bit since closing time also. So I think that the outside markets bode for us, at least a steady a little better trade this evening, Todd.
Hey, Wayne, tell me one more thing. You probably spent the bulk of your time, I would think, over the past week, not with the brokerage side of your business, but with the side that deals on crop insurance. In your area, what did most people take and at what levels?
We saw a lot of 80% CRC with the enterprise units, because that's where the government subsidy fell in the highest. If they took GRIP, we took 9,100, and there was also, varying, but the majority was the 80 or the 85 CRC because of the reduced rates, because of the subsidies, and also that offered them the most dollars per acre to back up, and that sort of gives us the 880 put and the 404 on 80 to 85% of our crop.
Right, and last year they would have been at, 65 or 70% coverage?
For the same money? It would have been at least 10.
But would that have been what they'd been covered at, or would they have been at the same level, 80-85%?
We had a lot of the higher coverage last year because the amounts that they were insuring were so good last year, and of course that we paid a lot of claims on those just because of the revenue loss. The adjuster's been very busy little beavers out there and sending out lots of checks. So a lot of the guys done quite well in their insurance from last year. You know, where we're at this year, we don't know if we will or not, but we're right at the level that we can insure breaking even rather than if we would happen to have a dollar drop in either of these markets, why it would be quite devastating to the pocketbook.
Okay, so you've got 880 and 404 locked in on 80 or 85% of the crop. What do you do with the rest of the crop that's uninsured, or as you take a look at the whole picture, did you talk to them about broader picture problems that they might face as they go through the growing season and how protect both the upside and the downside potential?
We did, Todd. We talked about that last night's meeting, and you know, we were looking in the starting in the 420 bracket and the D's between here and the 445 mark to probably get that 15 to 20% that is not covered by the insurance sold, and next increment, sell another increment on up at the 450 level if we can get there. Then also we have a chance with our put basically that we have in place with the crop insurance. Why we've got a chance to wait for you know, maybe a weather pop, a planting problem pop, or something like that. And at those point in times, we can push our coverage to go along with our insurance coverage as far as. Knowing what's going on.
Anything else to add before I let you go that we didn't cover for the day?
You know, I think that just as we want to keep an eye on those outside markets, but we do want to keep an eye on what we think that is going to be planted, because the Informa numbers didn't seem to go over well with the majority of the trade. If you look, you know, there's November beans up 10.5
right,
and record plantings by Informa. So we're going to see a lot of estimates of what the planting is going to be over the next 2 weeks.
Thanks much for being with us.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
One quick note about the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting that we held last Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. All of that audio is posted on our website. If you'd like to go get it, you can find it over on the right-hand side of the page under All-Day Ag Outlook 2009. It's a smaller link, but look for it over on the right-hand side of the page at willag.org. Now, Dave Dickey is here with the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, Mexico announced yesterday that it will increase tariffs on 90 U.S. industrial and agricultural goods in reprisal for the U.S. canceling a test program that gave Mexican trucks access to U.S. highways. That program was intended to move the U.S. closer to implementing a commitment it made under the North American Free Trade Agreement. Congress killed the pilot program. Corn ethanol maker Avatine Renewable Energy Holdings Incorporated says it is in default on some of its debt payments and may need to seek Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Avatine said it did not have the cash to make a $15 million interest payment due April 1st or the $24.4 million it owes builder Kiewit Energy Company. Avatine, based in Pekin, Illinois, is in default on $300 million in 10% fixed-rate notes. The European Commission is offering to double the preferential quota for beef imports from the U.S. as part of a deal to end a long-standing dispute over beef trade. But sources say the plan by the EU executive, which oversees trade and food safety policy for the 27-nation bloc, did not include lifting a ban on U.S. imports of hormone-treated beef, which Brussels says is based on scientific advice. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says he is optimistic that the Environmental Protection Agency's forthcoming blueprint for a new renewable fuels standard will include a government mandate to produce 1 billion gallons of soybean-based biodiesel annually by 2012. There were 690 million gallons of soy diesel produced in the U.S. in 2008. And U.S. meat producer Tyson Foods Incorporated today says it will take a minority stake in Freshpet, a maker of fresh refrigerated dog food and treats. Terms of the deal were not disclosed. The refrigerated fresh pet food market is expected to reach nearly $500 million in annual sales by 2012, according to trade estimates. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website, the address, willag.org. There you can listen to this program and other ag programming. Download it as a podcast or just an MP3 file directly from the website. And you can sign up for our free weekend newsletter. If you can't get to the website or listen to us on the radio, you can always hear us on your phone. The number is 217-333-3434. We update it at 10:30 and 3:15 daily. Now up next, University of Illinois will host a biofuels law and regulation conference in April. I'll have details on it and a manure management conference. The first annual Biofuels Law and Regulation Conference, Incentivizing Second-Generation Biofuels, will be sponsored by the University of Illinois Energy Biosciences Institute, or EBI, Biofuels Law and Regulation Program, and will be held at the new University of Illinois iHotel in Champaign on the 24th and 25th of April. The conference will focus on the legal and regulatory challenges facing biofuels infrastructure. Among the topics to be covered are the Obama administration's plans for second-generation biofuels, federal and state efforts to establish incentive schemes, including those contained in the 2008 Farm Bill, the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007, the Brazilian experience at building an ethanol infrastructure, and lessons the U.S. could apply in building a similar infrastructure, case studies of the legal considerations inherent in infrastructure development, and climate initiatives such as low-carbon fuel legislation that may spur commercialization of biofuels. The second day of the conference will focus on sustainability standards for biofuels. Each of the scheduled sessions will offer question and answer and brainstorming opportunities with renowned experts in biofuels law and regulation. Attendees will represent a wide variety of law and regulatory fields encompassing government, academia, industry, and non-governmental organizations. Detailed information can be found at the conference website. It's biofuelsconference.org. Cost of attendance is free, but registration is required. The U of I is hosting another conference this spring. New conservation practices and manure storage capacity are just two of the topics that will be addressed at the 2009 Livestock Manure Management Conference and Workshops. The workshops, set for March in Effingham and Princeton, Illinois, are sponsored by the University of Illinois, the Illinois EPA, and the Illinois Pork Producers Association. One topic of discussion will be a new conservation practice standard released by the Natural Resources Conservation Service in November of 2008. The Vegetative Treatment Area, or VTA, standard is a new tool that can be used for managing wastewater, such as feedlot runoff or water coming off an outside feed storage area. There will be research-based numbers on how large to make the area, what soil types work best, what grass species work well, and what the limitations are. Manure storage capacity and weather-related manure releases will also be addressed at the conference. The manure management workshops are to be held Tuesday, the 24th of March at the Knights of Columbus in Effingham, and on Thursday, the 26th at Wise Guys Bar and Grill in Princeton. The workshop cost is $40, with registration beginning at 8:15 a.m. and the first session kicking off at 9 a.m. in the morning. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural energy markets as we do each and every Tuesday. Our conversation today with Mike Barwinski. He joins us once a month from his Kansas City offices with Louis Dreyfus. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about ethanol, how you see things developing. Maybe you can talk a little bit about bankruptcies in the system. Aventine, I see, is thinking that it may have to go bankrupt in Peak and Peoria area. Of course, Verison is in the middle of its bankruptcy already.
The Verison bankruptcy, we should actually hopefully hear news on within the next few days. The auction process started yesterday in the Delaware court system, and just very recent news came out in the last probably 15, 20 minutes that ADM is possibly going to buy one or more of the Verison plants as well. So once we get an official account of that, it should be pretty interesting. So right now the only two, you know, official words are that Valero and ADM are looking seriously at purchasing a number of the Verison assets.
Louis Dreyfus isn't in the auction? You don't have to answer that question.
You know, we obviously, you know, looked at them, but decided, you know, wasn't quite for us.
Hey, on the auction process front, do you think that the smaller plants will sell?
Absolutely. I think the smaller plants, you know, have a little advantage as far as the local truck markets to hit. And you know, they're not necessarily competing with you know, the massive plants around them. Most of the smaller plants are kind of strategically located in that they're not competing with, like, the 50 to 100 to 100-plus million-gallon plants nearby.
And then once the auction is completed, how quickly do you think that they can bring them back up to operating capacities?
I think early summer is probably the earliest. You know, first they have to bring the plant slowly back online, fix any issues that may have existed before or even after they slow down production. But I would say June to July, they'd probably be back at full production, if depending on when the sale and everything actually goes through.
And how are the margins in the ethanol industry at this time?
You know, they're kind of holding on right now. You know, they're still positive for, I'd say, the majority of plants, aside from those and maybe the destination markets outside of the eastern and the western Corn Belt. But, you know, they definitely had a lot of pressure on them recently, and adding another billion gallons back into supply chain if Verison comes back online, or, sorry, if the Verison plants come back online,
right,
could definitely pressure it even further.
And how do you protect your own plants in that situation? You've got to be thinking about it, I would expect.
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely, you know, you try to forward think as much as possible. You have a strategy of where you would like to sell margins and realistically where you can sell them. So you just kind of have to be realistic on what the market will pay for your ethanol today and what you can hedge at. And as long as you're making money, you're not losing money on every gallon you're producing, you could scrape by.
And finally, do you have any comment, and I don't know whether you will or not, on U.S. EPA considering and the push by USDA, a billion-gallon RFS addition for soy biodiesel? I think Louis Dreyfus is into that particular market pretty heavily at this time.
Yeah, right now we actually have a plant in Claypool, Indiana, where we're producing biodiesel out of as well. You know, I don't know as much about the biodiesel side, but I know that as we've seen in the past, these RFS can pass pretty quickly and out of nowhere, as we saw with the RFS-1 for ethanol.
Okay, thanks much. We appreciate you talking with us today, and we'll talk with you in another month.
All right, appreciate it.
Mike Barwinski is with Louis Dreyfus. He's based in their Kansas City office. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. We'll be back in 2 minutes with the weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Governor Pat Quinn says his budget proposal will include a sales tax holiday in August to help families pay for school supplies. A day before he formally releases an Illinois budget proposal that will seek higher income taxes, Quinn emphasized that he also wants tax relief for families. That includes lifting the sales tax for back-to-school shopping. He also wants to increase tax exemptions. The Democratic governor says it would mean a family of four making $24,000 or less would pay no income tax at all. Quinn faces a budget deficit that could reach $11.5 billion. He calls his budget a bold plan that will cut spending and put state government back on track. He releases it tomorrow at noon to the General Assembly. You can hear it live on AM 580. Illinois legislative leaders are expressing skepticism that a cap on individual campaign contributions to state politicians would clean up Illinois' ethical mess. Senator John Cullerton and House Speaker Michael Madigan say limiting the amount that candidates can get or parties can give would hurt in races against independently wealthy foes. Their comments follow a proposal from a coalition of good government groups. A plan to fix Indiana's bankrupt unemployment insurance fund is advanced to the full state Senate. The Republican-controlled Senate Tax and Fiscal Policy Committee endorsed the bill on a 9-3 party-line vote today. It would increase unemployment employer taxes overall, reduce benefits to most people out of work, and tighten eligibility standards in Indiana. The higher number of out-of-work residents collecting jobless benefits in the state, meanwhile, has triggered an automatic 13-week extension of Indiana's unemployment benefits. Indiana Department of Workforce Development officials say the program is a last resort for people struggling to find work. About 3,400 residents will immediately qualify. And the newest University of Illinois trustee wants the school to build on its research tradition to take creative approaches to higher education funding. Ed McMillan is the former CEO of Ralston Purina. Governor Quinn has appointed him to the Board of Trustees, replacing Robert Sperling. McMillan is a U of I graduate. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. We always talk with Don Day at Cheyenne, Wyoming, about the agricultural weather forecast. He's with Day Weather. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, it's a beautiful day here in the Midwest.
It is. We sometimes have nice days like this in March. Of course, we also have that rainy periods that we saw come on through earlier this month, and we are right now in a nice little break in between weather systems, that everything that we're seeing on our charts indicates that the weather pattern is going to stay active with more systems coming on through. In fact, for most of the Midwest and Corn Belt, we're looking at good chances for at least normal, if not above normal, precipitation over the next 10 days.
Ooh, and what would normal precip amounts be?
Well, when you are looking at this time of year, sometimes you're looking at as much as an inch or more in some areas, and a half inch to an inch, I think, in many areas of the Midwest would be your average amounts for a 10-day period in March. But we'll see that activity pick up in some areas like Iowa, Wisconsin, maybe northern and western Illinois, Missouri. Those areas may see more than that.
Active generally also means that it comes along with thunderstorms, and they can sometimes be dangerous.
That's right. We're really getting into that time of year where severe weather is a concern with any system moving across the region. And since there's a lot of cold air left up in the high latitudes, up in the Yukon, Alaska, Gulf of Alaska, the prairie provinces of Canada, there's still plenty of chilly air. So any front that brings some of that cold air in collides with the warmer, moist air that's coming up from the south. And we do bring in the official spring season here on Friday. So we are ripe into that time of year where any system could produce severe weather.
Normal active weather here in the Midwest. What about for the Great Plains and the hard red winter wheat folks? They've been suffering. Will they continue to suffer lack of rainfall?
Yeah, that is still a concern. Now, there is a chance that these systems moving through will start to draw moisture up from the south to where we'll start to see some better chances for moisture. Is it a slam dunk that the hard winter wheat areas are going to get a lot of moisture? No. But they're probably going to get some, if not with the next couple of systems over the next week or 10 days, maybe the ones just thereafter. As we're seeing sort of the logjam that's in the Pacific breaking down, causing systems to be more frequent. So I'm cautiously optimistic that some of those areas of the hard winter wheat country will get some moisture over the next week or two.
Have you been watching soil moisture levels in China and how they've been setting up for their coming growing season in the corn and bean areas?
Well, there are still some real dry areas, especially in the west, the north, and the southwest growing areas of China. Those areas are running a soil moisture deficit. In fact, I would say 60% of China, while not in severe dryness, is generally dry. So they do need some help in terms of being able to get more precipitation in China. The outlook is for some shower activity, typical spring showers across China, but nothing that's going to be excessively heavy. So there's going to be some areas of China that we're going to need to watch for continued dryness.
It seems to me that their normal growing season is just slightly ahead of ours here in the Midwest, more like what we would have in the southern part of the United States, maybe by, I don't know, 14 days or so. So they should be really getting started shortly. Any rainfall at all coming for them?
In the eastern areas especially, and the southeast. But those dry areas, the west central and the north, they're going to still be dry.
Okay, thanks much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.